just going to be an entire show of I told you so. Huh. I might as well just leave the room. Maybe I'll go get us a coffee. Because Barker, I know
that. You want my wallet? Because I know you won't pay for it.
Can I have the passcode to your bank card?
You tap it.
See, that's just not nice. Here I was going to start a show, and it was going to be basically a Dig Me segment with Kevin Barker. But Kevin Barker yesterday came on this show and said that the Braves had let the Dodgers back in the series with that late-game rally, and I kind of rolled my eyes because that's momentum is as good as the next day's starting pitcher. There's no such thing as momentum in baseball. It doesn't carry over. Guys don't, you know, anyhow, it just doesn't. Momentum, it's a dumb sports writer cliche that basically means I don't understand what the hell happened here, so I'll just chalk it up to momentum. No such thing as momentum. However, I would suggest that the LA Dodgers have momentum, Kevin Barker. And I'm just take your bow. You were the one that yesterday said, Max, look at Max Muncy's swing. I can tell by the way he's taking pitches. He's ready to go off. I'm like, yeah, right, whatever. Well, Max Muncy hit a grand slam last night, part of the 11-run first inning by the Dodgers. Yes, that is a major league record. In fact, the Dodgers haven't scored 11 runs in a first inning since they were in Brooklyn in 1954. So that was back when I was about 12. They haven't scored that many runs in an inning. So Barker, you said Max Muncy was getting ready to break out.
Yeah.
You've been talking up Corey Seager all the time.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that first inning. And let me ask you this. It was a great inning.
Yeah.
Does that mean the Dodgers have the advantage in this series?
I think they have confidence. I think that's all a right. Big deal.
They got Clayton Kershaw going today.
If he throws his breaking ball more, for me, he's gonna have a chance of beating the Braves. If he doesn't, then he's going to open the door again for the Braves. But, I'm with you. I think it's all about the guy you're facing on the mound, but I do believe in confidence. Hitting is all about confidence. If you believe that you're mechanically sound and you're short and quick and you're seeing the ball bigger than you have seen it the day before, that's confidence. And that will carry over to the next day. Now, again, it matters if that guy's locating and going down and away and can spin a breaking ball whenever he wants to and can move your feet a little bit. That matters too. But confidence is a big deal. And Max Muncy, you know, if you noticed, Jeff, I've hit some home runs in my day. You know, not in a playoff game against the Atlanta Braves, but I've hit my fair share of big ones. And whenever I did hit one, I knew what it looked like and I knew how I acted when I left the box. And when I saw Max Muncy act the way he did by flipping the bat, they were down a few runs.
Mm-hmm.
That will tell you that when you know his swing is, there's not a lot to it. You know, he's got that little bend at the knees, and he got that little flip of his hands, and then for some reason or the other, he generates more power from A to B than most humans do. Now, consistently, he's not a great hitter, so he's not gonna hit for high average, but streaky wise. When you start seeing him act the way he does and the way he leaves the box and the pitches he was taking, it's left-handed pitchers. That, for me, tells you that, you know, he may go on one of those five-game streaks where he can carry a team. And, you know, again, it starts with Mookie Betts, him beating out that play at first base to start the game. That's a big deal. You know, Corey Seager, for me, when he starts going to left center, that's when you may start to, you know, worry about how do you get past him and you know, put a guy on base, and then you have to worry about the Muncys and the Will Smiths and, you know, Cody Bellinger all of a sudden has got a little bit of confidence, got some moxie to him, right? So it's, listen, are the Braves starting to, you know, bite their nails a little bit with who they're pitching today? Maybe. You know,
yeah, they've got Bryce Wilson on the mound for today, making his first major league postseason debut. He'll be up against Clayton Kershaw. By the way, that's the 8:08 game tonight. Dodgers and Braves is 8:08 Eastern time. The Rays and Astros, that game is a 5:07 first pitch. And, of course, the Astros staying alive yesterday. A lot to talk about out of that game. 4-3 win for the Astros over the Rays. Dusty Baker.
Managers do matter, Jeff.
Yes, they do. I know. We'll talk. We got plenty of time to talk about that. Ross Stripling is going to join us as well. He is, of course, a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. He was with the Los Angeles Dodgers. A great person to get on to ask what the hell's going on with the Dodgers when it comes to the postseason. So we'll talk to Ross about that. He's also involved in wealth management. He tells you how to take care of your money. He's a smart guy.
2020.
He's a smart guy. Looks so anyway, that'll be a lot of fun. Ross Stripling joining us. As I said, I want to talk about the Rays and Astros. 590-590 is the text line. You want to reach out. You want to give Barker kudos for, he didn't forecast.
You don't have to do
well,
that.
You didn't forecast 15-3, but you were pretty bold. Like, it's something to come on and say that a team has led another team back in the series and then have that team go out and score 11 runs in the first inning. That's pretty good. You know, that's not backing into your prediction. That's a pretty good prediction. We'll talk about the Rays and Astros later because there's a ton of stuff to talk about. Dusty Baker managed just a hell of a game, I thought, in that particular game. So, Bryce Wilson against Clayton Kershaw. Let's flip the script a little bit here. What did you see? Look, you're down 11-0. Your approach, I would think, might change a little bit. What did you see from the Braves hitters? Because 3 runs last night. What did you see from the Braves hitters? When a team gets waxed 15-3, is there any carryover for the hitters and the losing team?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they were getting big. Looked to me like they were trying to pad stats and hit homers. That's what I did when I was when my team was down a lot of runs. You get a little bigger. You try and, you know, maybe back leg a few more balls. Marcel Ozuna. That was a prime example. He looked to me like he was backlegging bit more. He wasn't trying to stay through it and drive it to right center. He was trying to backleg it, get a little backspin, get his name in the paper. You know, it's okay to go get beat 15-6, and Marcel got a 2-run homer. Yep. That, you know, it's those kind of things. So you see a little bit of that. I think Freddie Freeman will calm that down a little bit. The at-bats from him, the professional at-bats. You know, I think he's back. Like, I think he can carry this team for a little while. You know, we talk about the Dodgers lineup. Freddie Freeman, for me, that's where it starts. Acuña Jr., you know, he needs to make an adjustment. They've adjusted to him. I don't know if he doesn't like the ball in, which not a lot of people do. Like, there's a handful of people that can consistently hit a ball in. I'm not talking about in or third. I'm talking about on the black end, which is where they're trying to go. And if they miss to him, they miss in off the plate. That's, you know, he needs to make an adjustment. Do you go up? Do you cheat? Do you, you know, clear the hips? Do you hit a ball 3,000 feet just to let them know that I'm looking in there? Maybe you do that first at bat. So that'll be an interesting thing to look at. You know, how does Clayton attack that? That's how Clayton, if you throw 88 and you're left-handed, you got to go in, you know, to make the breaking ball, to make the slider that much better. So that'll be an interesting thing right out the gate, right, to see how that's going to take place and those kind of things. But I think the Braves bullpen's all healthy enough. They're going to run out as many arms as they have to win this game. I think it's a must-win for the Braves. If the Braves want to win the series, for me, it's 1 tonight. Because if it gets 2-2, when it comes to experience and, you know, having one of the best teams in baseball on the ropes and then having the series being tied, I just don't know if they can come back from that. But if they go up 3-1 with the bullpen they have and Freddie Freeman being back and, you know, the superstars and defensively they have in the outfield, you know, Pache, that guy in center field, are you kidding me? Like, if his bat ever catches up to his defense, you know, putting a rookie at 21 years old looks like a veteran out there catching balls the way he's catching them and just like he's been there forever. So, you know,
it's remarkable, Kevin, how many really, really, really good young players there are in the game right now.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody seems to be finding, you talk about,
like, age doesn't matter. Like, you're 21 and you hit your first home run and you do it in a playoff game. It's like, I know I hit ninth, but okay. Yeah. Like, and hit a good pitch out. Like, you know why the Braves are good and they're going to be good for a long time is because they just keep rolling out stars. So the National League series is a little easier to watch than the other one. You know, I know you like your team, but your team's not a whole lot of fun to watch. Like, it's just, they're grinding out and Brandon Lau's not doing anything. And, you know, if Randy's not hitting homers, then you tend to want to not wait until, you know, can't wait till that other one starts.
They play baseball the way baseball is supposed to be played.
I guess. That's what you're going with.
You're jealous.
If you had to watch that and come on this show for 162 games of that.
No problem.
Yes, you would.
I would not. I'm seeing great pitching. I'm seeing great defense.
Oh, boy.
And it's the idea that
one nothing in the seventh inning.
The smartest kid in the room, the Rays. The smartest kid. We got this. You know, we got this.
What if they lose tonight? Do they still have it? What if they lose tonight? Do they still have it?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They're just trying.
I don't think so either.
They're just trying to stay interested right now.
Because I've always been on the side of the manager. The manager is you're only as good as your players. But then you see Dusty. And I've been around Dusty. You have too.
I want to talk about, let's move on to that series right now. 590-590 is a text line. I just want to touch one thing. Ryan of Victoria asked this question about the Braves game. Why didn't the Braves use a position player to pitch last night? I'm not a fan of it, but that game was over by the third. Were there enough arms that they didn't need to? Yeah, there were enough arms they didn't need to. I mean,
Shane Green at the end. That's look. I've been the one guy that says I can't stand that. It's a terrible look. It's a playoff series. You're playing the best team in the National League, in the Dodgers. I think that's just one of those times where you suck it up, you come back the next day, and you figure out how to use what good arms that you do have. And they didn't use any of their real good ones.
No,
they still all have those lined up for today.
Except for Shane Green, but
you know.
But that's kind of, let's just get the hell out of here, isn't it?
Sort of.
That's like, let's just go.
And really, these guys are big leaguers. Does it really? And a lot of the players for the Braves are young. Does it really matter if they get beat 15-3? I just don't think they care anymore. Like a veteran team would care if they get beat 15-3.
Yeah,
I just don't think they do.
And there's another thing to keep in mind here. They're already down Adam Duvall. They have already got Johan Camargo. And the other reason I'm not a big fan of position players pitching is I know a lot of you get a kick out of it. Go ask Ryan Goins what it felt like to throw his arm out when he pitched in that game against the Cleveland Indians.
I'm not
Indians
real sure how you I don't get a want kick
to risk. I don't want to risk. Well, fans love that. They think it's funny. I don't want to risk a position player hurting himself pitching. I don't care who it
you know
is.
What
I don't
do
care if it's the 29th guy in the roster.
I tried this when I pitch. You know what you do? The first thing the manager will say to you is just go out there and flip it up there. Who would ever do that? Have you ever thrown with your buddies in the backyard and just flip it to him?
No, not a chance.
You're going to rare back leg something, throw as hard as you can.
Of course you are.
And that's how you get yourself hurt.
Of course you are. It's a silly idea.
This looks awful.
All right, let's move on to the Astros and Rays. I mean, where do you want to start? Well, we'll start with the Rays first of all.
Okay,
Brandon Lau benched, as you suggested.
Well, I don't know if it's benched. I
want to talk about that. Okay, given a day off, not in the starting lineup. You know, I'm a big Kevin Cash fan. Have I mentioned that?
No. Well, I'm sure you.
At some point, you are
the head cheerleader to that team, so I'm assuming.
Here's my thing. Gibby, this used to drive people. You know, people used to go nuts about Gibby when Gibby would give Russ Martin the day off and then not pinch hit him. And, you know, an opportunity to use a right-handed hitter would come by, Gibby, would you send me else? And everybody would go, why didn't you pinch it? And his approach was, I gave him a day off. Now, I'm just wondering about this. Brandon Lau is scuffling.
Three for 40 anymore. That's lost.
Yeah, he's lost.
You can say it.
So Kevin Cash takes him out of the lineup, but then brings him in a pinch hit situation. He strikes out. Like, to me, if you are giving a guy, especially when your whole mantra as a team is next man up and we've got depth and we like the platoon advantage, yada, yada. If I'm giving Brandon Lau a day off, then he's got the day off. The last thing I'm doing is saying, grab a bat, big fellow, take your 3 for 39 out there and try to hit for me.
I
don't know.
What if he goes up and runs into one? What if then somebody says, well, you know, your best hitter was on the bench and he didn't use him. Again, I go to that conversation I had with Gibby when Gibby said sometimes I did things just so I didn't have to answer the question.
Yeah.
There you go, Jeff.
Okay.
Like, you know, every once in a while you gotta think. So Jeff Blair don't walk up to me in the heat of the moment after 15 minutes after the game and say, hey.
I don't think Kevin Cash cares about that.
I know that, but it's a lot of – so you got a lot of things going on. If I got him over here, I might as well use him. What's the difference in 3 for 39 or 3 for 40?
Well, you made this point. You've also got to know your room.
You do.
And
we're not in the room either.
Exactly. Yeah. And we talked about how one of the things with Brandon Lau, who was a guy wearing a microphone and he was 3 for 35, it does not appear as if he's wearing this. You know, it doesn't – obviously, it's got to be bothering him, Kevin, but it certainly doesn't appear as if he's hanging around moping.
Yeah, and I will guarantee you this, that Kevin went up before the game and said, I give you the day off, but if I need you, you're going in. I'll guarantee you he said that. Just by everybody, the way they talk about Kevin Cash. I know if I were Kevin Cash in that situation and my best hitter was struggling the way he was –
that's fair.
And I
that's
was giving fair. Him a day off, I would say, if I need you to pinch it, be ready.
That's fair.
You're giving him a warning.
Dusty Baker managed a game and a half last night, didn't he? First of all, Altuve.
I wouldn't have done that.
I know. Pointed out, did you see what they did with the shift all game?
Yeah.
They had Carlos Correa. I'd like to have an odometer on him to see how far he moved throughout the game.
He's got a cannon. He might as well use him.
But, I mean, he was like a rover. He was playing all over the place.
And yeah, so that's a little bit of the way they hit him. Altuve.
Okay.
Instead of not playing him, Again,
they hit him, but I'm saying that
instead of them, you know, putting him where he normally plays, they put him in the infield to try and make him as comfortable as possible. Because you could see even in the ninth inning that throw he made to second base, he's guiding it. Like, you could almost see him when he released. It's like my hands following the ball.
It's almost like you're trying to play hide and seek.
Go where I want it to go, kind of thing, which you never want a player to do. But if you have to play him,
well,
you know, and
you need that bat.
And then he hits a Jeff. He hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball to the pool side.
I don't.
You tell me what's more impressive, throwing 100 or hitting 100 to the pool side? Yeah. I understand hitting if you're a right-handed hitter and you're late on 100 and you hit it to right center for maybe a double, but to actually be on time out in front
and to do what you intended to do, to do with 100 miles an hour. That's pretty. We talked about that. How basically, no one guides the ball anymore because the guys throw to
hard.
But he was trying to do that. He was trying to do that with 100 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah, you say. Glasnow didn't have his breaking ball. That's the first inning. He didn't know he didn't have his breaking ball.
That's a great point.
George Springer, now when he hit the 99 to the pull side, maybe you're thinking, hey, breaking ball's not real good. He's a two-pitch guy. Mm-hmm. That's why if Tyler Glasnow, if those big old giant hands, Jeff, could ever figure out how to do a splitty.
Well, there's a lot.
Get people off that, because I don't think he could throw a changeup because of how big and long his fingers are.
It's interesting because
he can throw a splitty.
One of the things I went back and did some digging into some of the stuff that they were talking about with him in spring training. And they've been trying to come up with that pitch, and the changeup is the pitch he needs. And I don't think they have it necessarily figured out yet, but they were talking about that, how his fingers are so long. They're trying to come up with a pitch that he can maintain a consistent grip with. And, splitty makes sense because of the size of your fingers.
You know what you don't want, too? If a guy with that big of fingers and that big of hand, if he ever goes circle change, you'd actually have to look down at the ball to make sure you're gripping it the right way. You never want to do that. You give it away to the hitter, that kind of thing. So splitty was away for me, but still, you turn around 99, you're doing something.
Ross Stripling is a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. He's also a wealth management advisor, my old job. And he was with the Los Angeles Dodgers for a number of years. I would imagine he has a pretty good idea of what the Dodgers were going through before last night's game, during last night's game, and this morning. Ross Stripling will join us next. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. He is co-host of the Big Swing podcast. He's a financial advisor for B. Riley Wealth Management, as I mentioned, my old job. He is a right-handed pitcher with the Toronto Blue Jays. Stop laughing at me, Andrew Holland. He's a right-handed pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. He is Ross Stripling, and he joins Kevin Barker and myself on Baseball Central. Ross, thank you so much for doing this. I trust the offseason's going well for you and yours and that you're all safe and healthy and everything's good.
Yes, sir. Everyone is safe and healthy. We just had the 20-week appointment for our baby, and he's doing good.
Good for you.
And we're just about 2 weeks into the off season and cruising along.
Good for you, man. Well, congratulations. I'm glad everything is going well. Obviously, we want to talk about the Blue Jays, but we've got to talk about the Dodgers out of the gate here. What went through your mind when you were watching that first inning last night? If providing your 20-month-old gave you enough time to watch the first inning last night, because I remember what that was like, but 20-week-old. What went through your mind last night watching that?
Well, for one, is a little bit of like I told you so to some people that the Braves let the bats get hot the night before in that ninth inning, when the Dodgers almost came back, right? And then they lost it, man on third, had a chance to tie it up, lost game two, and then they come out and put an 11 spot up in the first inning. It's like the bats got awoken. And, they poured it on in that first inning and definitely, you know, showed why they won the most games in the regular season and are the number one seed in the NL. I mean, they just put on a show there.
Okay, you talk about the bats. We'll talk about Corey Seager. Is it just about health? Is that why he's doing as good as he is?
Yeah, I mean, I played with Corey since he was 18 years old. We were drafted the same year. We went to Ogden, Utah, rookie ball. And if Corey Seager's on the field and healthy, he's going to hit. And that's what he's always shown. And, it's easy to forget because he's basically missed all of 2018, and then last year was trying to just get his feet wet again. Still had a fine year, and now he's healthy, feeling great, and he's making pitchers pay like he always has. And he was my roommate for 2 years in L.A., one of my best friends on the team, and I'm glad to see him having the success he's having, because felt like he kind of lost to the Lindors and the Correas of the world and the Javi Baez, and now he's right back on that level as good as any of them.
Okay, if you're a Braves pitcher and you saw Max Muncy hit the home run the night before, you saw him hit the grand slam in the first inning, how do you pitch to him today?
Oh, man. You know, in a perfect world, you could say we're going to pitch around him a little bit, but pitching around him means you have to pitch to Seager, JT, and Mookie. Yeah. So you gotta go right at him. I mean, Muncy, by his standards, had a down year. I think he finished around a 200 batting average, but this postseason he's shown you what he still can do, and he's as dangerous as ever. So I don't know what the scouting report is on Max, but I'd probably read hard into it and stick to it, because you still got to pitch to him with the guys around him.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few teams, Ross, that when it comes to the playoffs, elicit as much sort of psychoanalysis as the Dodgers. It's like every move that doesn't work out, people analyze it, they overanalyze it. I mean, I guess that's what happens when you haven't won a World Series for a while and you're considered the best team in baseball. I wanted to ask you, how does that clubhouse handle the postseason? You know, is there a big difference in that clubhouse between postseason and regular season? Does the weight of, I guess I'm going to call it the weight of history. I don't want to be too dramatic, but does the weight of history when it comes to guys like Clayton Kershaw in the postseason and that, does that kind of hang over that clubhouse?
You know what? I really wouldn't say that it does. You know, I think everyone in that clubhouse knows that we've just been one step away, and by we, I mean they now, have just been one step away from winning two World Series in 17. You could argue that one was cheated right out from under them. And then 18, you know, ran into a historically good Red Sox team. And I don't feel like being in that locker in the last few years that when the postseason comes around, anything changes, that they're putting more pressure on themselves or anything like that. It's postseason baseball. Everything gets heightened and anything can happen. Last year, as the Dodgers, we ran into a buzzsaw with that Nationals team that was just destined to win the World Series. And two pitchers in Scherzer and Strasburg that were basically unhittable in the postseason. And sometimes that's just all that happens in October and you can't do anything about it.
Okay, Kenley Jansen, cutting a little bit, but it's 88 miles an hour. If you're a pitcher and you don't have your best pitch and you are called on to be in high leverage situations, how do you get people out?
Yeah, man. Then it just comes down to being a competitor and heart and guts. You know, I'm a guy that throws four pitches, so I can't really relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I would just start using the rest of the arsenal. For Kenley, a man that's just been able to rear back and throw one pitch almost down the middle for 10 years and be unhittable, to start, you know, really having to battle to get guys out, I'm sure it's frustrating. Kenley works his tail off. I see it every day. But at the end of the day, he does only throw one pitch. So you see him starting to mix in sliders a little bit more, maybe even a two-seam. And I'm sure his confidence is wavering a little bit. It's hard to watch for me because I love Kenley. But, he's just got to go out there and be confident and compete and trust that he's been in that situation so many times that good things are going to happen, even though he may not have his best stuff.
Yeah, you know Kenley, you know Dave Roberts. How do you think the Dave Roberts conversation with him went with, you know, how he's doing and when you're going to pitch him and that kind of thing?
You know, I'm sure it felt like a demotion for Kenley, and I'm sure it felt like, you know, Dave was basically demoting him, and I'm sure that was a hard conversation to have in the middle of a postseason when you feel like you're going to be the guy because you have been for 8-9 years to get that last out of a potential World Series, and now that may not be your role anymore. You know, that's a tough pill to swallow, but Kenley's a team guy. He pitched an inning last night in a game that was 10, you know, the Dodgers winning by 10 runs. Mm-hmm. So he's just going to have to take the ball when it's given to him and go out and earn that spot back, having success.
In conversation with Ross Stripling on Baseball Central. All right, let's shift focus a little bit to the Blue Jays. Now, you were a trade deadline acquisition for this team. What is, you know, now that you've had a couple of weeks away from things, Ross, what was your takeaway from your brief time with the Blue Jays? And you come from an organization that has a habit of unearthing guys, right? We talked about guys like Will Smith. I mean, the Dodgers, Dodgers are kind of like the Yankees. Yeah, they spend money, but they also do a hell of a job scouting, and they do a real good job developing players that they've signed. How would you compare the two organizations?
Yeah, really, man. The Dodgers have that rep of being like the Yankees, but if you go look at that postseason roster, a lot of them are homegrown Dodger players. They do a really good job of drafting and developing, especially in the Andrew Friedman era. And I tell you what, you get over here to the Blue Jays, man, and it's very similar. I mean, the whole lineup, a lot of the bullpen were starters turned to bullpen pieces for this year. They're homegrown by the Blue Jays. They're like a Thomas Hatch, like kind of picked from another organization and let develop it by the Blue Jays. That's really cool. I mean, that's an awesome way to do it, to think that these guys came up, they won some championships in the minor leagues together, they're all really good friends, and now they're all in the big leagues together competing and making their first postseason. It was cool to be a part of, and really cool to see, man, just like young talent, knowing that the future's so bright and I get to be a part of it. It's really cool.
When next season starts, is there one thing in the offseason that you're looking to get that much better at?
Well, this was a frustrating year for me in that I felt like I was throwing the ball as well as I ever have. My changeup was a true out pitch this year when historically it's just been average at best. I was throwing a little harder, but my results weren't good. I had almost a 6 ERA. You know, it was just a battle for me. I was giving up a lot of homers. So it's kind of get back to my strengths and maybe, you know, sorry, my car's beeping. And get back to my strengths and get back to, you know, what I was able to have success my first 4 or 5 years in the big leagues, whether that's watching video, getting with some coaches that have coached me in the past and picking some brains of just getting back to square one a little bit. And, you know, because this year really was frustrating for me.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into, and we will let you run after this. Tell us a little bit about how you got into, you know, wealth management and being a financial advisor for B. Riley.
Sure. So I studied finance in college at Texas A&M, got my degree. When I was going to have Tommy John surgery in 2014, I was staring 14 months of Arizona summer rehab and was just like, gosh, man, this just sounds so miserable. So I wanted to put my degree to work, and I was able to get in with B. Riley, who my grandfather invested with for 40 plus years, had a great relationship with them. And I thought I was just going to be shadowing a guy, kind of learning the ins and outs of investing. And what they said was, hey, let's get you licensed and, you know, let's do the real deal. So I took two big tests called the Series 7 and the 66, passed them both. And now I'm a licensed wealth manager, licensed stockbroker, where I can actually take clients, solicit advice and make trades on their behalf. And actually, I manage about 10 accounts, and it's a blast. I love it. Every day is different.
Ross, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. As always, stay safe and be well.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, this was fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care. It's Ross Stripling of the Toronto Blue Jays, co-host of the Big Swing podcast and a financial advisor for B. Riley Wealth Management. A guy who in his very short time with the Blue Jays made a huge, humongous impact in that clubhouse. He is extremely, extremely well-liked, and he's going to be in rotation this year.
Yeah, where do you see him? Fourth, fifth guy?
Yeah.
You see him any higher than that?
I would be lying if I said that I've seen him pitch a great deal. I certainly could see him being a fourth starter in this team.
I think secondary pitch has got to get a little better.
Yeah, I will put it this way. I think he's going to have a hugely responsible role in this team, pitching in some form. And as I said, you could probably tell from the conversation, he's really well-liked. So there you go, man. He was bought into the same thing. First thing he said is, I was telling people after what I saw in game two that this was going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's confidence. Yeah, you know, we all know they're good hitters. Yeah. Now you had to have the confidence in to carry it over to the next game.
Yeah.
With not caring about who you're facing. Once you get past that, you let talent let it fall where it may. That kind of thing happens. And look, they get a good pitch to hit, they're going to drive baseballs all over the yard.
So I got to tell you this, by the way. My friend Mark Topkin retweeted this. He's covered the Rays forever. This is from a Twitter account, Beyond the Box Score, which is SB Nation. Real good website. They're sort of, you know, they're the Saber guys. These are Saber guys. These are numbersy guys.
Yeah.
The Rays are a great team, but they aren't aesthetically pleasing baseball team to watch. Baseball is entertainment, and the Rays' faceless star approach to the game is damaging, even when they are winning. Dude, when you've lost the analytics guys, when the analytics guys are saying your team is boring, as a Rays fan, you know what that is? That cuts me
right.
Yeah.
Well, the issue with this is, now I'm a baseball fan. I'll watch any game anytime. Doesn't matter. I'll stay up to 1 o'clock watching them. That's me. But the normal fan has to have somebody to tune in and root for. And when that's the manager of a team that you hate is the only person that you want to do
on.
Well.
Nobody out
it's
there.
It's very tough.
Listen.
It is
590,
hard.
590 is the text line.
Everybody's going to agree with me.
No. Let's get a measure here. 590, 590 is the text line. Yes or no? Do you hate the Rays? Simple question. Yes or no? I hate the Tampa Bay Rays. 590, 590. Simple question. Just text us. Yes or no?
Here, I'm texting right now.
Yeah, I know you are. 590, 590. Yes or no? Do you hate the Rays? We'll go to the text line. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Oh, baby, look, they're coming in. We've got over 50 texts, actually closer to 60 now. Kevin Barker, the vast majority of them, vast majority, don't hate the Rays. Don't hate the Rays at all. Who was I just looking at? Any team that defeats the Astros is a team of mine. I hate the Rays, always have. They're a boring team. Jeff's love for them is hella annoying to a Jays fan. Great pitching and great defense will always be underappreciated by casual fans. I don't hate the Rays. They play baseball. Plenty of ways to win the game, the right or wrong way. Enjoy the ride. Their exciting plays are still pretty boring. What an effective shift. Look at them take the ball that way. Not from Ryan and Victoria.
Way to go, Ryan.
But by and large, yeah. Andrew, people do not hate the Rays in this city. They do not hate the Rays.
Huh.
Hate's
a strong word. Yeah. You know, not always the most fun team to watch.
Yeah, and several people have asked, and I know they want to talk about this on the leadoff with Ziggy and Scotty Mac, but Kevin, you were down watching the great slug off today between
a couple of Babe Ruths.
Between Scott MacArthur and Mike Zygmunt.
Very disappointing.
Really?
Very disappointing. I'm not telling everybody.
No, we don't know. Need to know how it turned out. Would I be disappointed? Because I was talking up Ziggy big time, remember? I was talking up Ziggy. Would I have been disappointed? Would I have come away thinking less of Mike Zygmunt after that?
I'm not sure. I don't know where your standards are.
Jeez. If you know my standards for most things, you got a pretty damn good idea where my standards are. All right.
Tune in. You'll have to find out.
Okay. But you were not impressed. Safe to say, because I came in here and you had I just basically wasted 90 minutes of my life look in your face. You sometimes get that.
Pretty far drive, Jeff, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, anyhow.
But won't know until you watch.
Keep those texts coming. Some guy says I spend
that's
6 weeks.
All it took.
Some guy said I spend 6 weeks a year in Tampa. Love the Rays.
Oh, nice.
I just like the Rays. Terrible for baseball.
Huh. Hmm.
I dislike the Rays, but you can't hate them. That's like hating and cheering against the weakest kid in a schoolyard full of bullies.
Maybe. American League East.
Anyhow. I think that they are a model. This may be the difference. I think I can probably sum this up for people. They are the model franchise in terms of how to run a team. I'm not saying how to win a game or how to play the game. Yes, I understand that for a lot of people, they are boring, but that they are the model franchise. That's how you run a team. Built around pitching, sign guys, get value, all that good stuff.
I think they figured out something that they do in the minor leagues better than everybody else. Whatever that is, something that they do that somebody
pitching
else doesn't do
in terms
now,
of pitching.
Obviously they have talent, but right. you need when you get coaching and whatever it is, routines. I don't have the answer for you, but whatever it is, they do something different than everybody else. It works, and they get buy-in.
Alex and Caledon, Rays in Atlanta would be one of the worst World Series ever. The ratings would not be good. But you know what?
The ratings for the Astros Rays aren't good either.
Yeah, but you know what? As I will tell people, because I know that there are people out there going to talk about ratings, go and check the ratings for the Yankees-Mets World Series. Woo! Biggest media market in the world. They were horrible. So go and check out those ratings.
I guess.
Somebody wants to know where we can watch Scott, Ziggy, and Barker. Thanks.
It's coming.
Nowhere. But it's not video. It videoed?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
They're running that.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. Get it down, get it singing, what?
Okay, here's the thing. Get it down. If we operate, and we will talk about Dusty Baker in a minute, but get it down and get it singing.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to describe.
It was a whisper.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, okay, so it was not, it wasn't a symphony of get it down and get it singing.
It wasn't loud noises. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right. Just a symphony. It was like.
It was harmony for sure.
Okay. All right. You're really underselling this, you know.
Yeah.
Underselling this.
I can't give anything away. You got to watch.
Watch, listen in. We should do something like that. You know what we should do? Here's what we should do. We should have a video game of Barker and myself playing Scrabble.
Oh, funny, Jeff. Let's add something that makes you run or hit or jump or...
My daughter kicked my ass in Scrabble this weekend. You know what she did?
Even though you have been running a lot.
No, but you know what she did? You know what she did to do it? What? She made up a word, Orens, O-W-R-E-N-S. And it sounded like a word, so I didn't check in the dictionary. It turns out that it's like a disease, but it's named after a dude, so you can't use it.
So it is a real word.
Or somebody. Well, no, you can't use names in Scrabble. But I didn't realize this till like 3 moves later. Of course, she landed it on a triple letter score.
Mm.
So I was screwed. I was pooched. And Scrabble at our place. Now, you got to remember, family full of teachers and, you know, university kids and all that, and they're all English majors and all that. So I'm
bragging rights.
Yeah. So I got nailed with an illegal word. My sister just.
I bet you.
My sister annihilates me. Oh. My daughter's on a three. She's on a 3-match winning streak.
I'll bet
now.
You are a terrible winner.
You are
a terrible winner.
I'm a horrible Scrabble player. I challenge every word normally. It depends how much I've had to drink too. I mean, sometimes, you know, you let it go a bit.
Do you Scrabble and drink, Jeff?
All right. And I love this text. I don't care who wins between the Astros and the Rays. I just want to hear Barker's Bundesliga picks.
Huh.
That's coming tomorrow. All right, we got a few minutes left. Let's talk about our man Dusty Baker again. We talked about Jose Altuve. Talk about Zach Greinke and how he handled Zach Greinke in that meeting on the mound with
Martin Maldonado. I think that's more about the catcher than it was anybody else. Dusty went out there, I think, to take him out. He had his closer Presley basically walking down the stairs. He was coming in the game, and then the catcher walked out and said he ain't going to hang this breaking ball again to Randy. It ain't happening. That cutter sinker thing that he can throw down and in to the righty, we can do it again. Now, Tim Timmons, the first base umpire, called Randy out on that check swing, which he did not.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, that was...
It's, you know, umpires. But it's one of those things where, Dusty, you got to tip your hat. And analytics people, I'm assuming, were just yanking their hair out because everything I'm assuming said, he just hit a home run off his breaking ball earlier in the game. Don't let him do it again and beat you here. And Dusty went out there and basically said, I'm the catcher.
And he also had to strike out. He struck out Mike Brousseau as well, right?
Well, but again, it's more about the catcher walking out there and basically raising his hand and saying, if he doesn't throw this breaking ball, we have him. He's out. Mm-hmm. Dusty said, go get him. That takes, you know, Dusty might be the only guy in the big league who could do that.
I've seen guys in the past get talked out of taking pitchers out, but I'm trying to think now how many guys would do that. Because, you know, as we've talked about, right, so many of the moves, the analytics don't take into account the conversation on the mound, right?
Well, like
analytics determine you're going to make the move, and they don't take into account necessarily what is said in the mound. I mean, I'm with you, and I don't know if it's one of those things, because Dusty's handling of pitching has always, it's been an issue. Let's be honest. A lot of people in the game look at Dusty's handling. I mean, he had the reputation as a guy who destroyed young pitchers' arms at one point in his career. Then he had the reputation of being a guy who overused the bullpen. If you manage as often as Dusty Baker manages, you're basically going to piss off everybody at some point. You're going to piss off the analytics guys because you're too old school. You're going to piss off the old school guys because you're buying into analytics. You're going to piss off the guys who think that you... ruin starting pitchers. Then you're going to piss off the guys that think you don't use your starting pitchers enough. If you manage as long as Dusty has managed, everybody in the game is going to be able to pick at one of your flaws. But that to me was, I mean, that was old school.
I think with no
that was old school. I'll look you in the eye. If you guys have a plan, then go do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's about Greinke. I think it's more about the catcher.
That's what I mean. You guys have a plan.
We got it. Dude, he ain't throwing the breaking ball here, the 73-mile-an-hour hanger that he can get the head out on and hit the home run here. We're not going to throw that. We're going to throw cutter, sinker, and we're going to get somebody out. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Again, if it wouldn't have worked, what would you have said? Should have brought in your closer, but it worked.
Yeah.
So he's the greatest manager to ever live. You want to be a big league manager?
You got
it. Me personally, I think with no Justin Verlander, somebody has to have a longer leash. For me, it's got to be Greinke.
Well, I was a little surprised that he isn't going with Christian, or that he used Christian Javier in relief, and now he's going to go. They're going with Luis Garcia in a do or die situation. That surprised me a little bit, but. You know, look, it's a close game. You know what the Rays are like. I can also see Dusty's thinking, I gotta manage for tonight, right? Like, I gotta win tonight. I can't worry about what's
sometimes you
gotta
let
tomorrow.
The people on the field decide for you.
Yeah.
And if you have a catcher that feels that strongly about something, what if you'd have said no? No, I'm good. Then what you say doesn't matter. The book that I just read before I walked out here says otherwise. I'm not gonna listen to you. There's you got to be careful with that. You know, I'm not saying that he's always a player's manager, and there has to be a big boy in the room. But occasionally, when a guy feels that strongly about it, and then what would have happened then if you'd have said no, I'm going to go with what this says. I'm not going to go with what you feel and what you think and what you probably know is true, because you know how to get this guy out. You've seen him hit. You know what he's swinging around and what he's not hitting and that kind of thing.
This was Greinke talking about that. He didn't say anything on the mound. He said, Maldi, that was Martin Maldonado, said that I was looking good and that I could get out of it. Like I said, I thought it was nice having some guys have confidence in you. I know it was an important time of the game and it was a tough part of their lineup. It worked out. It didn't work out. It would be different. It worked out, and I felt good all the way around. And then you go. Dusty Baker, Maldi was adamant about it. He can get this guy. I said, okay, you got it then. It was more old school doing the right. This is interesting. It was more old school doing the right thing that I thought was right, and we came out ahead. So there you go. That gets to your point. I'm going with my catcher.
Yeah, he'd went out there to take him out.
Yeah.
And the catcher talked him out of it.
Yeah. That's.
I mean, the catcher's the quarterback on the field. He sees it better than anybody else. He knows what's going on right in front of him. And I saw the same thing. If he doesn't throw a hanging breaking ball, the cutter sinker thing into the righty is tough.
Yeah. I don't
care how hard you throw it. If you throw it in the right spot, it's almost impossible to hit hard. And that's how they attacked him.
So Luis Garcia will be the plan of attack for Luis Garcia, a rookie, is that he'll get one time through the lineup at least. The only person who's not available is Christian Javier. We mentioned he threw 35 pitches in game 4. You know, I'm just looking at his numbers. Boy, this is a really young guy. But this is kind of where the Astros are without Justin Verlander.
They'll score runs. It's that simple for me. Who's on the mound? The Rays offensively don't scare you. They scare you. I mean, I know you're tooting their horn like crazy, but offensively they scare you. No, they scare you with the way they pitch. But offensively, you know, if you somewhat locate. And keep it away from Randy Arozarena, not let him beat you. You got a chance. Like that's and hopefully your lineup early can score some runs, take a little pressure off of the whoever's pitching for you, and you can play good enough defense. And Jose Altuve doesn't chuck one away.
Yeah,
yeah. You that's how you take your chances. Your lineup's better. Show us.
I'm thinking of the young pitchers I've seen from the Astros. The Astros are. This will be an interesting offseason because we know that the core of that team is starting to break up. We know that George Springer will probably sign elsewhere as a free agent. There's just you get a sense, Kevin, you've seen baseball enough. You get a sense when you watch a team, you just get a feeling that, okay, this might be the last kick of the can for this core group. But I look at that team. They got so many good young arms.
Yeah, Paredes is the one guy. When does Dusty use him? That's the question.
He's kind of like he's like that nuclear
hard
weapon in the
thrower,
bullpen.
You know, effectively wild kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, ask Kevin Kiermaier.
When do you use him?
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. I think, to me, again, we need to see. If the idea is to go three times through the lineup, to me, I'm going with my starter after that. What are you pointing at?
TV.
What? This guy walking through the street.
You missed it.
Barker's a little, because I've got.
Who's winning tonight? Who's winning it?
I'm trying to think.
Ray's moving to the World Series tonight.
Watching at Paris on TV.
Can the Braves win? Go up 3-1.
I miss Paris. Huh?
Can the Braves win? Go up 3-1.
The Braves are going to win the series. They'll win tonight.
Oh, they're winning tonight. You're that confident?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a done deal. The Rays are moving on after tonight.
There's no doubt about
that. Not a question.
No. Rays up, everybody. No doubt. No doubt. You know what that? See that? You know what that sound is? That's the Rays shifting in the first game of the World Series.
Yeah. 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 Just lovely.
That's
Rays awesome, right?
Ah, there's nothing I love more than a shift.
Watch that for 8 days. Oh,
it's like baseball porn. Look, they're shifting. Oh, my God. They are shifting. Writer's block is next.